don't know a thing.
Process. Minty Steed actually was in contact to actually notes that she's going to be talking about the Rydale Game Fair, Fiery Jacks, horseboarding, wood carving, lurcher shows in Patrington, and more this weekend. Astounding. Force of nature. So, what did we make of Know a Thing by Nate Ian Lennox?
I liked it. I like that sort of. What I did like about it is a very relaxed voice he has. He's not straining anything. It's a very. I think it's just. I don't know. I just got the impression it was his natural sound. You know.
Well, there
and
we
it's the sort of thing that I would like to see perform more than listening on a radio over a phone, right? Because I think he could. I think in an intimate sized audience, he'd be something. I think.
Yeah. Of course, Ian, you know, you simply have to go to that website thingy and type in sirenonline.co.uk and you can listen to the entire show in its entirety. You know, it's wonderful. You can even download the podcasts and catch sort of some of the wonderful stuff that's in there. And indeed, I believe you have. Louise Field has just sort of sent a little line. She would like to invite you to join Manchester City, England's finest supporters. But I don't think you're going to do that, are you, Ian, really? Never mind. It's okay. Thank you, Louise. Wasn't sure she's actually part of the whole thing.
I expect a dignified that with an answer.
Well, I've just had Jessica saying, so was he quite important on the day? And ooh, that must have hurt when she's looking at the Dennis Stewart overhead kick to the whole thing. But, is that not the sort of thing you do regularly in netball, Jessica?
No, unfortunately. It looks a little sore.
the bicycle kick, yes, yeah. But what a way to win the whole thing. Peter Barnes, of course, scored the opening goal, and then I think Alan Gowling, who was a school
That's
teacher.
Right. Yeah. I think Mark McDonald crossed the ball for him.
Well, about the only thing he did do, actually. Malcolm, who I don't think ever won an FA Cup final with Newcastle or Arsenal. Still, never mind.
No, I don't think he did.
That's what happens when you start off your career with Luton Town. It's okay. I know.
Got to start somewhere, haven't you?
We've won one of the legends of the North in all sorts of ways.
I met him recently, actually. I met Malcolm recently.
Yes? How is he these days? Do you want to book him for the show?
I haven't got his telephone number, so I don't know. But, I met him at a do with a chap called John Gibson, who's the chief executive sports writer or sports editor of the Evening Chronicle up here. And I got chatting to him I gave him one of my books, actually, what they call The Net, about the corruption of football.
How prescient those particular things are. I see that UEFA have actually changed the fair play rules once again, so England will only have one seeded team next year in the Champions League. But that's by the by. Let's move quickly on to John Wenham's diary, because we need to give a little mention to what's happening at the Lincoln Drill Hall this coming Sunday, the 26th of April at 6 p.m. It's the Six Sixers Ball Mystery. I'll say that again for the benefit of yourself, Ian. The Six Sixers Ball Mystery. Gary Sobers made history by hitting Malcolm Nash all around St Helens. Surely he should have been arrested. That was back in Swansea in 1968. But what happened to the battered ball? Even Ian Lennox is stumped by that.
I have no idea.
Stumped.
No.
See the cricketing references? I don't know. Join local author Graham Lloyd and John Parkin, the Nottinghamshire batsman, standing at the other end during the famous over to find out more about one of cricket's most iconic moments. That's the Six Sixers Ball Mystery. Gary Sobers and Malcolm Nash in 1968 in Swansea. And if you want to take part in that or be there, £10 for your tickets. Concessions £8. Contact Lincoln Drill Hall, 01522 873 894. No surprise that John obviously puts that as the top number one event, really, being a cricketing empire who's already got his season's fixtures through. Very good. Do you remember that particular event, Ian, or were you far
too young? Yes, I've seen it on film. I think it's dropped on a boundary one stage. I think one of the Sixers bounced off somebody for something or other. I saw Sober's bat. Arguably the greatest cricket has ever been. He was a great batsman, and he could bowl spinners, he could bowl medium pace, he could bowl quite quick as well, and he's a very good fielder too. He's just a genius.
Jessica, have you ever thought of taking up cricket?
Not personally, no. My dad was very, very into it. He used to go out all the time when I was a kid, and I didn't mind watching it. I don't know if it was for me. I prefer more physical, like running around and
netball.
Prefer that. Yeah, netball. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's very good.
Interesting argument. Netball is more physical than cricket.
Yeah. Well, I wondered if you'd come on that one.
But
yeah, I mean, they can't be bothered whether they're in or out. It's just like baseball, really, but with less excitement. And I didn't say whether I was referring to netball or cricket there. Ian, have you got any advice for Jessica with respect to Minty Steed, who's joining us in the second part of the programme, when we actually will be talking also about why there's such an attachment for folk to their mugs and other such material? Certainly in the East Midlands, people are very attached to their mugs.
Their
mugs. Even Jessica found this quite astounding. That it's an argument that's been going on for generations.
Well, they have a favourite mug and they drink out of it all the time.
57% of people in the East Midlands have an emotional attachment to a cup or a mug. The attachment is so strong that over 1 in 20 people have said that they've kept their cup or mug for over 15 years. And
really?
Two-fifths of those in the region of the East Midlands say they'd feel angry, upset, or totally devastated if their cup or mug broke.
I think it's probably because they can't get to the sea.
Well, far be it from me, as we're in the heart of the University of Lincoln, in the heart of Lincolnshire, to even sort of comment on that particular area.
Start a survey on that? And how big was it? How extensive was it?
We'll be speaking to Professor David Crystal, OBE. He'll be talking about the difference between whether it's a cup or a mug, because there's a language issue here as well. And indeed, Dr. Christy Ferguson, who's a food psychologist. So that's very important to actually work there. Is it a cup? Is it a mug? Either way, this is important. Apparently, a post on Heinz Soup UK's page has also clocked up over 3,500 impassioned comments on the cup or mug scenario. Are you a cup or a mug person, Ian?
Well, I just drink out of cups and mugs.
There you have it.
One's got Nicastinated colours on it, but that's about it. Really.
And that'll be a precursor to William's.
Certainly don't match the silly cups in my house.
Well, that's because we've got them all in the trophy room.
Not this season, Alex.
But at least
your cup runs empty.
Anyway, moving on. Any sort of thoughts that Jessica should employ? Any questions you'd like Jessica to put to Minty on your behalf?
I don't know. Minty wants to read my book, I know.
Okay,
so Jessica, perhaps give her that.
Okay.
Lying idle.
It's just waiting its moments to actually appear and work up. And I'm sure it will. Well, when it happens, it'll manifest itself properly and appropriately. Also in the second hour of the programme, Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore will be talking about what they'll be speaking about at the Telefantasy and Society event on Wednesday, May the 6th, here at the University of Lincoln. And I mentioned William Setwell, of course. He's got a brand spanking new website, which is absolutely gorgeous and all sorts of things. And he was actually trending on Twitter recently because of issues he'd had over comments MasterChef. Exactly.
Yeah,
so
right.
I'll be speaking to William about that as well. Meanwhile, Jessica, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please?
Yes. So, Ian, have you enjoyed the show this morning?
I have, Jessica.
And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
I do hope so.
Great.
There we are, you see. Happy days all round.
I'm here on your doorstep till the morning comes. You may find me asleep in the sun. Never thought I'd pay this price again. I just couldn't believe.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Excellent, fantastic stuff. Okay, the time has arrived where we can formally welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition two absolute ace individuals who can actually put some of the flesh on the bones of this fascinating survey we've been considering so far this morning about mugs, cups, food scenarios, etc. First and foremost, leading English language and linguistic expert, the legendary Professor David Crystal, OBE. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you.
And also wonderfully legendary food psychologist, Dr. Christy Ferguson. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning.
So let's move into this piece about the cup or the mug debate in terms of people concerned about that. David, I mean, surely it's just a case of some device that we use to drink from, isn't it? It could be hands.
Yeah. Yes, well, I wish it was as simple as that. But, you know, for a couple of hundred years now, this debate has been raging. What do you call it? What call it if you've got something that seems sort of halfway between? You know, has it got a handle? Has it got a saucer? What shape is it? And things like this.
But, David, it's not it's not the FA mug. It's the FA cup, surely.
Yeah, that's right. Cup became the standard. Cup became the normal one. Cup became the thing that you generally use for a container of this kind. And the reason for that is it became part of the upper class mentality, you see, in the 18th century. People had a cup of tea, don't you see, in the afternoon. And it became widely used in society for the normal way of talking about a drinking vessel, and then, of course, ornamental things as well, like cup finals and things like that.
Clearly, well, certainly...
Mug came in later and became a much more lower class kind of thing.
you're recognising the Northern audience there, David. I'm very impressed, you know. You'll be having a flat cap and some stotty cake before too long. It's brilliant.
Well, that's it, you know. I'd invite you in for a cup of tea, but I wouldn't normally invite you in for a mug of tea if you're in a certain class, would you?
And there's always the challenge when you've got a mug of tea, do you actually raise your little finger? That's another sort of etiquette point which we could go into. The other point, which I know, Jessica, you're quite fascinated in this particular thing. Chris, if we can turn to you for this. This personalised attachment people actually have to their cup or mug. Is this healthy?
I mean, I think it's a sort of natural process. When we're younger, we have our favourite blanket or our favourite toy. And, you know, as we're in adulthood, maybe we're not using the same things. It's not toys, but we still have those emotional attachments to objects. So in this case, it's, you know, research by Heinz Cup Soup, and they found that 60% of Brits had that emotional attachment to a cup or mug. And it's very strong. I think around a third of the research found would feel totally devastated if it broke.
Jessica, thoughts from yourself?
I just think it's very strange. Just because I personally haven't had that connection before.
this, David and Chris, is because Jessica is originally from New Zealand, and Lord knows what they have over there. It's very, very strange.
You know, when I went to New Zealand and I was speaking at the University of Wellington, afterwards they wanted to give me something. What did they give me? They didn't give me a cup. They gave me a mug with University of Wellington written all around the side. So even the big institutions, you know, they see mugs as something ornamental. They're collectibles almost, aren't they? So I can understand Christy saying that you get very attached to them.
Mm. Well, clearly from the point of view of it going international, Heinz Soup UK's page clocked up over 3,500 impassioned comments, 6,500 likes. Does this relate to the extent that language can divide us? I mean, on the one hand, we all claim to understand it, but is anybody truly its master, David?
Well, cup and mug is a distinction that goes all around the country, and people have different views about it. And there isn't anything particularly regional about it. It's not like, you know, talking about buns, or are they baps, or are they rolls, and all this sort of thing. That's a different area. There's lots of regional difference there. Cup and mug are simply around, and people take different views wherever you live.
Mm. Well, we don't want to go to war about this whole thing, but you know, it's important
silly.
That we address exactly what, you know, cups and mugs. Christy, just returning to your good self, a question was put yesterday by somebody when we trailed ahead to the fact that you're going to be joining us this morning. A food psychologist, do peas really need to actually have such things, or do you have a therapy session with a carrot? I don't know, just, just to outline the concept.
Well, it's around our relationship with food. So inevitably, a lot of people know what they should be eating or what's going to be healthy for them or how they can, you know, that they want to maybe change their diet. But a lot of times it's around our relationship with food, and that's sometimes what people struggle with the most. And we also create a lot of associations with food, sometimes negative associations, like with food phobias. And, you know, so and that's a lot of times how I work with people, sort of helping them to change their mindset around what they eat.
And that explains why you set up the fantastic website called the, the Food Psychologist.
Absolutely, yes.
Very, very good from that point. David, I know you're also based in Wales from that point of view. Do you find that the Welsh have something completely different, or do they just not use cups or mugs at all and use something completely away from that?
Oh, they haven't reached Wales yet, cups and mugs. You know, we just go straight out of the saucer here, don't we? I mean, no, I mean, the distinction is just the same here as anywhere else, actually. People around here, like everywhere else, when you're talking about cups, you're thinking really of the contents of the cup. You know, I'll come around for a cup of tea. I mean, that was a nice cup of tea. And we say things like that. We don't generally say, that was a nice mug of tea, do we? Mm. We see mugs as objects, as physical objects, more than the contents that they have. And that really does help to explain the difference. When you're upper class and you have your tea, and you're lower class and you have your mug, well, that was the 18th century. Things have changed now. The distinction has blurred, but it's still there, even in Wales.
I think this debate will go on and on, and clearly will continue to resonate. Clearly, there's no time to actually go into BAPS, rolls, or cobs, or various. That would be a whole issue. Two final questions for both of you. Wonderful folk. Professor David Crystal, first and foremost, have you had a reasonably okay programme connection with us this morning? Has it been okay for you?
Fine for me.
That's okay. That's all right, because the next question goes straight to Christy. Have you enjoyed it as well, Christy?
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Marvellous. So can we prevail upon both you fine folk to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised both of the language and indeed the psychology of effective etiquette and food and all the rest of its abuses? Will you both return?
Absolutely, yes.
Always around.
And I won't even get started on the notion of whether we should actually take our lizards fried or sautéed or boiled, but that's another story. You can speak to the producer. She'll explain everything about that. Effective if they said one more mug of coffee, but that could be a critical thing. Again, fascinating. Christy Ferguson, food psychologist, and Professor David Crystal, language expert on cups and mugs and scenarios there. Is it a cup of coffee? Is it mug of coffee? Minty Steed, do you know, would you go for mug or cup, or was it a case of it's all relevant, it's all different lines of things? What's the official line? Are you there, Minty, or are you off on another line entirely?
Sorry.
Good morning, Minty.
No, just a slight distraction. Actually, turned into some middle of a marketplace.
Yeah. I thought something was going on. Really, I thought, well, we'll open up the microphone. Hopefully, we won't say anything too compromising. We've just been talking about cups and mugs of coffee and so on, or cup and mug, etc. And it would seem that most linguists would say it's a northern-south divide once again. Here, it's a north-south divide. Do you refer to a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, mug of tea?
A cup. I've never referred to a mug of anything.
Apart from obviously,
I've never used one. Well, someone handed me one once, and I couldn't cope with it.
Always and mugs.
Always, And I always usually in the habit of taking my own cup with me.
There we are. Ian Lennox sends his best. He's also suggested maybe Jessica, when she's finished reading the wonderful world of Gentlemen and Players, can pass it on to yourself. So Jessica's with us in the studio as well.
But
please do, considering I added a contribution towards that.
Yeah, well, there we are. So let us move on to...
Not saying which visitor is.
Exactly. So there's a part of that that comes... Spot of that book, when you manage to read it, see if you can spot the bit that Minty actually was responsible for.
Okay. Well,
But the Rydale Game for English Heritage, by the way, happy St. George's Day, Minty. We switched it in the first part of the programme, so happy St. George's Day to your good self. Fiery Jack, Wood Carvings, Patrington. So where do you want to go to? Got a few moments. Share with us.
Then, well, it came up to the very first one. I did suggest, you know, Scanson would be an ideal place. And one or two people in English Heritage came along, and I would say the only curtailment or the only sort of slight hazard one had was just how cold it was most of the time, and that during the night it was so frozen that you could have literally broken the grass off, you know, the way you could snap off an icicle. It was so cold. But it was great fun, and it has the makings of a super event, and they're going to come back for another year or two to give it its full benefits of trying it out. And everybody that did attend really loved it, and we had a great time. Pirate Jack actually does the complete old-style jester act, and lots of juggling, etc. And he goes all around the showground. He's great fun too. He's a super chap. Mainly, most people came from Devon, etc. Several people took at least 7-8 hours to come up, and then quite a few of them were going to stay and do a tour around Yorkshire to see the sights, you know, Whitby and all around the coast, etc., before they went back down again. And we attended only with the Lurchers because they were the ones I thought we'll have got something entirely different. And it turned out to be amazing. They do the Lurcrazy. Now, Lurcrazy is run by Kevin Mumford, who lives in Devon, and they've got the whole Lurcrazy team up with them. And on the morning, you'll have racing. Then you have hurdles, just think of horses for National Hunt racing. Then you have your sort of sprint race, and then the finale is the long jump, and this is where we really came into it. Lester was so keen to join the racing that after he'd had his turn, of which he didn't know to start at first, because please remember Lester is 9 years old and he'd never raced in his life, but as soon as he realised what to do, he was off, and he gave the winner a damn good run for his money. Now he then, when he comes back out of the ring, he realises what that of which race is all about. So he's so mad keen to join in, he actually laid flat on his side and wormed his way a bit like a sideways limbo dance to go underneath the fencing to go and join back in the race. Scruff took off so fast, and then he didn't know quite what to do, turned around and set off again, and then at the end he actually overtook everyone else. So that was very interesting. Belle didn't like it at all. She's turned around and sat down, so she will join in. Then we came to the hurdle race, which, Scruff demolished it, which everybody laughed and applauded at. Belle wasn't very keen. Then Lester came, and he wasn't quite sure what to do with it. We cleared the fence. We knocked one down, cleared the fence, sort of thing. But then he turned around, and he came back and jumped all the fences with great style in reverse, which is difficult, especially with sloping poles. So we knew he definitely enjoyed jumping. Then we had the long jump. Now, the record is 20 foot, and everybody suddenly realised, and Lester suddenly realised, this is something I can do. And it started at 12 feet. Now, these are long white poles over on, like, rods, you see, to hold them. They can knock them off very easily, so they're not hurt or anything. But so you imagine, first of all, he's shot off. We made sure he could see a couple of them jump, so he was ready, he understood what to do. And he just took off a flying start, and he cleared 12 foot with masses of room to spare. Everyone then realised that if the dog wasn't just jumping, he could really jump. So it went up to 14 foot, and off he went again, and he just sailed over it, no trouble at all. Went up to 16 foot, and everyone was being knocked out left, right and centre, and he sailed straight over it with masses of room, almost a good cow length.
Can I just hold you there momentarily? Because obviously there's so much information that's working through there, and I want to return to the Fiery Jack thing as well.
Yes.
Are we actually saying here that there's a lurcher called Lester that's obviously part of your own team, Minty, jumping without the aid of a javelin, is actually physically jumping 16 feet?
Yes. And he did more. When he did the 16 feet, you know, straight over, and then the chap who runs them, Kevin Mumford, he came over, and he sort of sat down beside the wheelchair, and he had his hands on the arm of the wheelchair saying he could win the championship. This dog can win the championship. He said he's so good. His eyes were lit up, and he was so excited because this complete novice who was a lurcher quite old, really. I mean, they can live a lot longer, but a lurch is 9 years old. Never jumped anything before, apart from going over the little fences, which he's trying to learn what to do, you know, his head work out how to do them, is doing this. And all the crowd gathering, everyone's filming him, videoing him, photographing him. There's a whole murmur around the ring, you know, that just not only was he doing this, but he's doing it with no effort and absolutely just...
And where is this lurcher doing these jumps, Minty? Where was this event?
It's at Rydale, and then next we come up and we go up to... We went up then to 18 feet. We're 18 feet spread. Now, you imagine clearing 18 feet. And there was only three left, and then we had two knocked out. There was one knocked out. Lester just sailed over it, and so did the other dog. But the other dog had used up all its lives, because sometimes you can have up to three chances of each, you see, and it had run out of lives, and Lester had one life left. So we do it again, and he just did it, and Kevin came up again, and he felt, oh, I've found probably the champion, because there's a big championship during the summer for all different qualifiers, and he thought, I've found a complete novice in old age for a lurcher is doing this. And he thought, oh, you know, he was thinking of all the pictures in Countryman's Weekly and everything that was going to come up with this. And then they had a little rest for a little while, and then they put it to 20 feet. Yes. And there was only two left then, and one took one pole down. It knocked the end pole down. And Lester by then, because he was tiring, you see, he'd never done this before. It's all completely new, and the motion used to do it, he'd never used. So he's using muscles and that had never been called into use before in his life. So he was tiring a little, as you can imagine. And so he set off, and he was just absolutely sailing it. Everybody's saying he's going to clear the 20-foot. And then he just sort of wavered a little, and he wasn't sure whether he should be going over the side of it. There's like a side part to it to stop them running everywhere, or he should be continuing on. And he sort of wavered, not sure whether he's suddenly to swing to the left or go forward. So he knocked, three poles down. But he actually cleared the length of it in the jump, but he took three down. So he ended up reserve champion, and it's the reserve champion long jump, 23 inch and over lurches. That's measured to the shoulder. And to do that from absolutely zero, never even seeing anything like it before in his life, I think was amazing. And everyone, the whole showground was buzzing with it, the achievement Lester had come to.
Well, I think it's well done, Lester, for
That's really impressive.
Fine day, which of course was the Rydale Country Show, April 18th and 19th, Scampston Hall. We've been looking actually on the website for Living Heritage Events, which is livingheritagecountyshows.com. Tragically, no photographic evidence that we've yet found about this, but it's obviously it's there.
It's Countryman's Weekly, and it's going up and on Lur Crazy. There's a website for Lur Crazy, and it's going right round all the different lurcher sites. And that by next week on, it'll be all over the internet.
There we are. Lurcher jumping 20 feet. 20 English feet, imperial measurements. Yeah. Let's not go metric. It's unbelievable. Yeah. We thought Dennis Tewart's overhead kick at Wimbledon in 1976
was
impressive.
But this is outstanding.
And we've been invited down to Burley on the May Bank holiday.
Which is the 24th and 25th of May. And I'm putting it right now to Jessica Ward that maybe, Jessica, you'd like to join us with us if you can stay here and this side before you head back to the Isle of Man. Maybe that could be a wonderful way to the Burley Game and Country
fantastic.
Show.
Yeah, the horse barn is fantastic. The ferret racing was an absolute hoot because a certain well-known person, his ferret was going really well. I mean, it was winning. And then as it came down the last pass, he just put his head up for a moment. So he tapped the little tube thing above its head. Well, the ferret looked up at him as if to say, "Who do you think you are? I'm the ferret here. I do this. And hundreds of times, I know how to race, I'm a champion." And he just tapped again, and it just said, right, and he turned around and went back the other way, because it was clearly insulted about its trainer handler.
I've got to ask you the question, before we say farewell at this particular moment, horseboarding. What the heck is horseboarding?
Oh, it's great. Well, we were there for the evening, you see, before the event arrived, because everybody piled into the tent because it was so cold. It was sort of communal warmth, you know. They'd come up from Wales to do the horse boarding, and he's had a tremendous fight to be able to develop this business from every trial and endeavour he's had. But he's fought his way through from a one-man band into now he's got 9 or 10 teams out there doing this for him, and it is great fun. Just imagine when you see the skateboarders, only they're holding on to or when they're surfing, but you're holding on to a handle, you're in a sort of semi-crouch bent position most of the time, and there's a horse ahead of it, and you're on the end of a rope that's fastened to the horse, and the horse is going at a very, very sharp, nifty pace, and it's weaving in and out of bending poles and over obstacles and all sorts, and you're on the end of this rope and you're hanging on, and it's just your balance and how you can stay holding the rope and holding on to the skateboard as you're going. Now you do that on a big showground.
I don't know, Jessica, do you, I mean, looking at the photographs there, horse boarding, fancy looking that up?
Yes? I would absolutely love to do that.
You see, you've got a volunteer for somebody who wants to take part
in a bit of horse boarding. They will certainly take a volunteer participant, yes. And one chap, he was so excited about that a certain personage was going to be there that he rang and let his mother know. And, of course, as they say in a certain area of Wales, the mammy, you know, and he said, I must answer this. The mammy's so excited she's on the phone again to see about it. And it made everyone's day. Everyone loved it. It was a really good event.
Genuinely phenomenal. Again, we'll keep abreast of the Living Heritage event site and obviously follow through. We'll hopefully do a few pieces with them as well. Last two questions for Minty Steed, please, Jessica.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, definitely, especially being able to speak on behalf of Lester, you know, doing this, because you think dog ears into human ears, it's quite an edge to do that. I don't think many humans would manage it.
Yeah, Lester. Will we be hearing from you in the near future?
Oh, most certainly, because we have the Patrington event at the weekend, which Alex knows being there, haven't you, Alex?
I have been to Patrington.
Exactly. The cakes, obviously, yes.
Indeed, we would be there, but we'll be covering the North of England Horticultural Society Spring Flower Show, so it's all good. Yep. Minty, it's been fantastic going from horseboarding to Leaping Lester, the lurcher, the Leaping Lurcher called Lester. We'll speak again very soon. Up next, William Sitwell. Bye for now.
Bye.
I am a swift wind, sweeping the country. I am
when my back's against the wall,
I can feel
I'm the world's greatest.
I saw the light
and I'm next star up in the sky.
Jessica, if you're going to go to the world's greatest culinary critic, you need R. Kelly to actually set that sequence.
Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend who is William Sitwell.
Indeed, and the website certainly is, William, the greatest. Jessica's just been overwhelmed.
I am, very.
To move from horseboarding, I'll say that again, horseboarding, and the right way of pronouncing or dealing with mugs or cups, to the williamsitwell.com website. It's fantastic. Welcome, William. How are you?
Yeah, great. I'm glad that song's ended. That was terrible, wasn't it?
I just sense
71 of R. Kelly's worst songs.
Well, it was.
It's just like, I don't know, it's like kind of watching Sick.
Yeah.
Just jumping down someone's staircase.
That's a very interesting description, I must say.
Interesting. And it has to be said, probably the opposite of Ed Wellman's view, who actually used to have his children singing the greatest song when he used to teach music in Essex. So that's.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Just goes to show. Anyway, it was featured in the movie featuring Will Smith about Muhammad Ali, hence the greatest, not the biography of William Sitwell, which is yet to actually be produced. But anyway, life continues. What was this trending on Twitter scenario? Because Emma Tenson, who sounds her best, but she's a wee bit poorly this morning, said you were trending on Twitter this week over issues you'd said on MasterChef, William.
Ah, well, you know, people get very overexcited about MasterChef. Actually, I'm filming it today. I don't know. Occasionally I say these, and it seems to elicit a rather violent response. But Twitter did actually shut down one account of someone who was threatening to kill my family, which I think is fair enough.
Okay, that escalated quickly.
I'm the only one who's allowed to threaten my children.
I mean, these are the dark sides of social media, the trolls, which you just think, no, don't do it, just go away, you horrible person.
That's so ridiculous.
Absolutely.
It is very odd. There's a sort of nasty streak that seems to go through quite a lot of people in this country where people think it's completely normal to send abusive messages to people that they've never met. I mean, you know, you only have to look underneath the comment section on Mail Online, look at, and I think people who do pop up on TV, I mean, I think politicians, I'm sure they suffer from getting massively severe abuse on Twitter. It is a downside. Yeah, it could be a jolly thing, a useful thing.
But bring
out a nasty streak in the British public. Yeah.
Mm. It's not just unfortunate, it's also ill-mannered, and it's karma will get you back, is all I have to say. What goes around comes around.
It's very cowardly.
You've got that Garland that does the eye deck.
We do, yes. Well, no, actually, Jessica is not Rachel. Rachel was busily sorting out various other things from our London thing. But no, Rachel is still based happily in London, much as you are, William, at this particular stage. Or maybe you're not. Anyway.
No disrespect then to your other guest. Her voice is just as beautiful, that's all.
That's it, you see. I mean, now you can match that with Emma Tinson, who's still sort of glowing from the compliment.
She is actually.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point, because we could talk about your website, once again, williamsitwell.com, because we're taken by that. Or we could talk about what you would like to talk about. What would you like to say, William Sitwell?
Look, it's your show.
Oh.
You have the topic. You can't put the onus on me.
Well,
I spend too much time trying to think of ideas for other people.
Well,
you want to send me a monthly consultancy fee and we can come up with some topics.
Do you mean you have...
It's an embarrassing thing to discuss live on air, surely.
You haven't been receiving the checks. I'm just astounded. anyway, moving on. I was interested...
Let me tell you the most delicious thing I ate last night. A new restaurant in London called Percy and Flanders in Pearson Square off Berners Street. A new square, which means anyone going there using sat-nav gets lost because it doesn't exist. Char-grilled broccoli, char-grilled asparagus, done on the plancha. Fantastic. And it's some of the best veg I've had in a very long time. And so I think if you get yourselves planchas, I think you should char your... I'm very keen on charring. Burning chilies, that's good for you because you don't get any carcinogenic effects. So I think if there's one message, it's go and char your veg.
Jessica, do you go in for char grilling in Australia? Sorry, I mentioned the A word there. In New Zealand or indeed the Isle of Man?
Yes, I suppose kind of barbecuing is sort of char.
The old classic Barbie. But is there a difference, William, between the Barbie and the char grill? Or is it actually, it's like cup and mug? Are we into that debate again?
Well, I don't know. There's all sorts of different grills. And I think there's the flavour you bring to your food can depend on the kind of wood or charcoal that you use.
Mm.
And not all grills are charcoal based. And so I think the grill experts will tell you get a different flavour. Of course, you know, and of course a different heat from different devices. So I think that so there's lots of different factors involved. But I mean, I always think that keeping is intense heat, short cooking time, long resting time. Isn't that really the story about steak, meat, and so on, I would have thought.
That's very good. And where exactly are you today, William Sitwell? Because you've got lots of wonderful atmospheric windy effects coming through
background
there.
Background sounds.
I am on, where am I? Bramley Road, outside the Dry Cleaners. By my office. And then I'm going to go off and I'm filming MasterChef this morning.
We're doing
the celebrity show.
Ooh. Sounds exciting.
Can you reveal who the celebrities are, or is that shh? No.
If I knew, I wouldn't. But
exactly. The tension and the excitement that just works in every sense of the word from that point of view. Once again, it's been a delight, almost unparalleled. Although I have to say, slight little disappointment. In the radio section of williamsitwell.co.uk, each week on Soho Radio, I host Biting Talk in association with Galvanina, producers of sparkling organic drinks from Italy. You could also say each week you are the official legendary correspondent on Siren 107.3 FM's Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yeah,
know?
Well, when those checks do start arriving, when the money starts popping, I'll tweak that. But any typos you spot, please let me know.
I was going to get a cousin who's been having long
posts on Facebook telling me about every typo and every grammatical error.
I thought long and hard about, do we go down that line? And I thought, you know, outrageous. I mean, I was going to give him that. I thought, no, I'm not that sort of nasty person to give him a metaphysical slap on air, basically. But yes, some people.
Yeah,
please. It's very good indeed, whether it's space bars and so on. It's a very good website and much, much, much better than the one that preceded it. It's very good.
I think it's fantastic.
There you have it.
I like the rustic background.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, well, it was built by our head of innovation at John Brown Media, a very skilled guy called Christian Ruland, and it's hosted by Wix, not the people who've got their name on it, W-I-X. They host websites. And so you buy these things bespoke, you buy them off the shelf and you can tweak them. But it's quite a neat little job. So anyone wants to have a look at it and give me any feedback, you know, tweet at me, any abuse. All welcome, just don't threaten to kill my children.
That is definite. That's outrageous.
Exactly.
Last two questions for William, please. Jessica.
Okay, so William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, always, thank you.
And will we be hearing from you soon?
Yeah, well, you know, listen, Alex, you try and call me next week, I'll be asleep and I'll be in Boston.
This is true.
I think you better have a week off and I'll come back and we'll talk about
The other alternative is we could move you very briefly into the midweek drive on the Wednesday evening slot, where time-wise it's sort of mid morning.
Try me, you can call me. If I answer, we'll chat. Well, don't let the listener down. I don't want your village to be, you know, let down.
So noble.
Exactly. I mean, the only challenge, I think, from today, in all honesty, if I was analysing the whole thing, is a lot of R. Kelly fans might be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, we can cope with that. How do you feel about Cilla Black?
How do I feel about Cilla Black?
Yeah.
Did you see that film, the series on ITV?
With Sheridan, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah, she's one of the greatest actresses of our age. Deeply scripted, fantastically well filmed, very funny. Love Cilla Black. Loves it of that, but I much prefer Sheridan singing her songs than Cilla. Mm-hmm. They disrespect the Cilla, but I think Sheridan has a better voice.
There you have it. Another controversial thing to take him off to Boston. William Sitwell, we salute you.
I will bring you flowers in the morning, wild roses as the sun begins to shine, sweet perfume in tiny jeweled caskets.
If we were looking back at the way the programmes evolved, starting off with dentist Amit Rai talking about oral healthcare through to Richard Fitzwilliams refusing to talk about certain movies, and obviously quite clearly on Royal Baby Watch, through to Linda Papadopoulos and Objects of Love. Don't forget you can, of course, send in your photographs of things that captivate your own love scenario to the love capture slot of the eHarmony site. Could win you £1,000.
Definitely worth it.
I would have thought so. Ian Lennox, Dr. Christy Ferguson and Professor David Crystal talking about food psychology and mugs or cups, then of course horseboarding, on to William Sitwell and his scenarios. How can we actually continue to sort of work on that basis? Who do you think we should actually invite to the programme now to join us telephonically to keep the citizens of the good place of Lincoln happy and entertained?
Ellen Stevens?
Alan, I would have said. Yeah, Ellen Stevens, of course. Ellen Stevens. Do you just love it, Alan, when you actually have a New Zealander actually
say Sorry, I get that a lot.
Ellen,
yeah,
exactly.
I got that a lot with my friend Ellen.
Who is indeed Alan, but still, Alan, Ellen, whatever. Are you there, Mr. Stevens, and how's life?
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, well, I am here. Yeah, the sex change has gone through okay.
Well, that's why we had Alan Stevens / Fiona Moore, because we don't know. You could be one of them. No, they're totally, totally separate individuals. Good morning, Fiona. Are you there as well?
Yes. Hello.
Oh dear. The joy and wit and happiness that's actually there. We can actually also unveil that, as we mentioned to Richard Fitzwilliams in the first part, as well as a drone likely to be present at the wonderful, exciting world of the Telefantasy and Society Conference. Living an actual drone that's there. We'll also have the Ragtag Battlestar Fleet, a full floor-to-ceiling, a rendition of models from the Battlestar Galactica series.
Wow.
Built specially with respect to the Ragtag package and all the rest of its pieces, probably right next door to the Drift display. So lots of exciting displays coming through for that. And Alan Stevens, or Ellen, depending on his...
Sorry. Sort of,
and Fiona Moore will be there talking about, you know, the sort of historical sort of perspective of life. You look at series like Blake 7, Battlestar Galactica, and so on. I have been told, actually, that Ellen has also dedicated, together with Fiona, he's put a little dedication in their latest book on Battlestar Galactica to yours truly, which I'm not worthy of it, really, but still.
No, I didn't think so either, but Fiona would have
There you go. Jessica, any questions you'd like to put to the man who is Alan Stevens about cups, mugs, anything really?
Oh, actually, yeah, we'll touch upon that. Do you call it a cup or a mug?
Is it a
Do I
mug?
Call it a cup or a mug?
Yes. Is it a mug or is it a cup?
Well, there's a difference between a cup and a mug, isn't there? In my sort of like provincial way, I always thought a cup was like a bone china thing that you held with one finger stuck out, and a mug was a sort of big solid thing you stuck at work.
That seems to have been kind of resonating with Professor David Crystal, OBE, and his view that it was a northern thing. But clearly, from your own point of view, Alan, it's not north-south, as more west country. So I wasn't sure whether, you know, it was a bit like Wales, you just had the saucer.
Well, my grandfather used to do that.
Yeah.
My grandfather used to drink his tea at saucer,
yeah.
Is it the French that drink from bowls, I think? They drink milk from
the bowls.
Don't
know where the French drink from, but we want to go public on that. The Entente Cordiale is obviously sort of... It's there. It's an interesting...
What's mug in French? Bowl. Well, look at that,
I think we're bored with this topic now. We've only got 40 minutes on the show to go, and you know, there are other things to actually talk about. So, moving on, have you caught any more of the Thunderbirds Are Go series, Alan?
No, I took it off my Skybox.
Oh.
And why is that...
I didn't find it very entertaining. I was never a big fan of Thunderbirds anyway, to be honest. I mean, I liked Captain Scarlet and UFO in Space 1999 and stuff, but what's it called again? Thunderbirds came out in 1965 and ran for 30 episodes into 66.
32,
I was born
32
in,
episodes.
Was it 32 episodes, one of them. And I was born in 66, so it wasn't really my generation. And when they repeated it in the 1990s, which apparently was a big success then, I was too old for it. So there isn't that nostalgia element for me. And also, I don't think it's, very good. So there you are. I don't watch it.
Okay, then. Well, as honest, if nothing else. But you have been busily using that social media device called Facebook to actually put lots and lots of photographs about the excitement that was UFO up there.
And lots of crazy
captions as well that's actually there. By the way, as I noticed you've actually put this in that particular area, we'd like to also echo your things for the third and final time on the show today. Happy St. George's Day, everyone. So,
yeah. Especially if you're Turkish.
Precisely, because we need to celebrate the day when, in your own words, we can celebrate a man whose father was Greek, whose mother was from the Jewish Arab city of Lydia, or now known as Lod in modern-day Israel, who himself was born in Turkey and who never once came to England. So there we are. That's why we like to celebrate.
UKIP love that.
Stay away from anything to do with that. Do not, exactly. We're not going to go there. At all, you know, it's just a system. There are other zones as well from that point of view. But yes, we have a still. Now, the still that he's put up there, Alan Stevens, on his website, is actually one which demonstrates that the balloon is about to burst because of a lack of oxygen, if memory serves. I don't know what he's been doing with his other areas that he's been putting in there, but he's been very busy, has Alan, in terms of this whole sequence that is there. I mean, I was scooping through these systems. I mean, yeah, there's one lovely sort of piece that you've actually got about people working through their cars. Do you know, that came out totally incorrectly. Working through their cars, you were having a sequence where Commander Straker is having a car race on one of these episodes, I believe.
Yeah, that's from... it was from an episode... It's actually a very, very good one, actually, called... Time Lash. And then they're driving in these comic cars. I just wrote, you know, from the episode Budget Cuts. Or it could have been Shrink Ray, couldn't it? You know, no idea.
It could have been. We're still. I didn't realise how fulsome your. I mean, he's been very busy, hasn't he? With his, there we are. That's a dramatic car chase from the UFO episode. Actually, there was another episode called Budget Cuts, but that's the official line that's out there. I think that would be quite.
Those are really cool little cars, aren't they?
You see the one from Youth Ray?
Almost horseboarding like.
Yeah.
You see the one from Youth Ray?
No. Oh, we might have skimmed past it from that.
Alex Freeman for the episode Sex Change Ray.
Yeah, you see, we're getting silly now. I think that's a different lie entirely. But
here's a good one. Don't give me that. Racial prejudice burned itself out 5 years ago. Straight yeah. from Prince Lieutenant Bradley in the UFO episode, White Splain.
Yeah, so we passed that by, and we could probably just return to it again, just ahead of the Captain Scarlet scenario and various other factors that's actually there. And if you want to actually find out a little bit more about this whole system, I'd also say I like Alec Freeman talking to an empty chair in the UFO episode LSD. Very good.
That's good, because there actually is an episode called ESP, isn't there? So sometimes you didn't get the title.
I'd suggest you need to get a life and do more horseboarding.
What about the Alex Freeman confronts a member of Shadow in the UFO episode, Carl Jung?
Look, I know in a couple of weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, we'll be having a magician on the show, but please, you know, there are certain things that you just have to steer away from radio because it needs far too much exposition to actually work. So
let's start a bit.
Hold away there. I know, we'll work through that. Jessica, any questions again you want to put to Alan about life, the universe, and so on?
Yes, so is there anything happening in your life that you'd like to share with us? Are you working on anything?
How are the cats, by the way?
How are the cats? Yeah, they're okay. I mean, Zuko had to go to the dentist again recently, but he has a few teeth, unfortunately, removed. He's got this strange ailment where the enamel is absorbed back into the gum, and it's a bit painful for him. But that's been sorted out now, and he's fine, and Aisha's fine, and Fiona's fine, and I'm fine, and I'm currently trying to write an article for... A dwarf got back to me recently and says, you know, quick, we need to fill up the next issue of CT or whatever. Have you got anything? And I'd already sent them something.
Can I just translate for the benefit of the folk who might sort of think about the language?
Okay. Doctor Who magazine.
Doctor Who Appreciation Society is Dwaz.
Yeah. You could say, you can explain it, shall I?
I think you should, Alan. It is your phone link.
Okay. The Dwaz, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, do a magazine called Celestial Toy Room. Which is, was it? Yeah, it's Toy Room, isn't it? Which is an episode of a William Hartnell Doctor Who story. Anyway, they said they needed some more material for this month's issue or next month's issue. And so I'm attempting to write up an article at the moment. But, you know, when you're sort of like, you know, thinking, I don't really want to do this, but you are forced to do it. So you do about one line, and then you have a break and do some stuff on Facebook for an hour.
Yeah, well, you see.
And then you go back and write another line.
Alan, that's called displacement activity.
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is trying to find, you know, two things I don't like doing. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I marginally less don't like doing, I then get done. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah.
Well, that could help. Or not, as the case may be. But never mind. It's been... Or extraordinary. I mean, I thought we couldn't get more surreal after the leaping lurcher from Leicester. Or no, actually, it's leaping lurcher called Leicester, who actually leapt 20 feet?
20 feet.
20
yes.
feet.
Mm-hmm.
The leaping lurcher from Leicester, that's a tongue twister. Yeah.
It's called Leicester. I don't think it's originally from Leicester, but it's called Leicester.
So.
Perhaps it's Leicester as in Lester Dent, the original author of Doc Savage, Men of Bronze.
Might be.
Then again, it's another thought to concentrate on. As we said, Media Madness coming up, as if it could get any crazier after 10 o'clock. Last two questions for Alan Stevens. Please, Jessica Ward.
Have you enjoyed the midweek drive this morning?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, good.
Oh.
It was excellent, actually. One of the best.
Well, you see, if Alan was of a mind, as indeed, obviously, Phil Leonis is, to actually listen online, I could have asked him for his notes on the show, but I know he won't have listened to the first hour and 40 minutes. He'll have to wait until the podcast comes around, then he can listen to it all over again.
There we go.
Thank God. Thank God for the podcast!
Exactly.
And will we be hearing from you soon?
Well, see, the thing is... Yeah, because there's an event taking place, isn't there, Alex?
Yeah, Wednesday, May the 6th.
Are you going to record it?
Telefantasy and Society. I would hope that certain sort of parts will be recorded. I mean, that's the idea. We'll certainly we'll set Jessica on the case with Emma, and they'll work through that whole thing. Yes, the MTAG building, you can register. Simply send an email to me, alevchuk@lincoln.ac.uk.
Are you going to do a book on it afterwards?
I would hope so. It would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be nice to actually get something that generates from this whole sequence. Which
it would be, wouldn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
that is the idea. Yeah, precisely.
Pain, effort, and sweat. Finally got a book out of it, at least.
Yeah, precisely. Or at least a few articles for Celestial Toy Room. But anyway, it'll happen.
That might be an idea, actually.
Yeah, well, indeed.
Yeah.
Fine. Alan and Aisha and Zukov.
Yes.
And Fiona, who's the silent partner, obviously, today.
Yep.
We salute you.
Like a big, bold bird braving the battlements of broadcasting, it's the Midweek Drive time on Siren 107.3 FM.
Find yourself.